I'm Gab. He's Don. Slightly milder in West London today, this morning, Don. Thanks for coming in. Jules, unavailable today. What a show we have because it's international break, but there is so much going on you can debate whether it's good or bad, but Rubiales now gone. Mm-hmm. Antony suspended effectively by Manchester United, although I'm sure they'll call it something else. We've had Euro qualifiers. Italy are terrible.
Scotland are amazing.
But let's start with somebody who's even worse than Italy, maybe.
No.
Or more disarray.
Can't be.
Although they'll have no trouble qualifying for the Euros, unlike Italy. And that's Germany. And a 4-1 loss against Japan. Not unprecedented, because obviously Japan gave them a hiding at the World Cup. But enough for people to completely lose faith in Hansi Flick. And to discuss this, let's talk with Archie.
Archie! Oh,
there he is. Archie, at the top. Part of me says, all right, it weren't good, but it was a friendly. You were in it till you were in it kind of close to the end. I'm wondering, is Flick not gone for the 4-1 loss as much as he is for all the weirdo experiments that he's been doing, like in this game with Joshua Kimmich at right back and Schlotterbeck at left back and all this nonsense?
I think weirdo experiments is a good way to put it. And it's also the overall performances and the results, despite them, they're all friendlies for Germany because they automatically qualify, as you alluded to, because they are hosting the Euros next summer. And the reason he's gone is because it was heading for catastrophic consequences for Germany. And whilst you say they were in the game until the end, they shouldn't have been. Japan had several one-on-one chances where it required miraculous saves from Marc-Andre ter Stegen to bail them out. And if you look at the XG as well, it's not good reading for Germany. And the way they played, it wasn't, I would say, symbolic of a team that was really looking to save their coach. They looked out of ideas. They looked confused. And that has been the pattern with Germany so often under Hansi Flick. And somehow they have moved backwards from what was another disastrous World Cup campaign. And the things that Hansi Flick did didn't really add up.
Two straight World Cups, not getting out of the group stage. And okay, first time around, obviously Flick wasn't there and it was kind of funny, or some of us enjoyed it, like against Korea and whatever. But this last time was pretty grim. I want to ask you, though, we had this image of German football of like, yes, they're organized and disciplined and they always plan ahead. And this whole Das Reboot generation, this whole stuff's worn really, really thin. This, to me, feels like chaos because it's not like Flick became weird and was getting bad results and people didn't understand what he was doing all of a sudden. It's been like this for a long time. It feels to me like it is a gut reaction, sacking somebody from, what, Saturday to Tuesday, like, or Friday to Tuesday, or whatever it was. Couldn't they wait until afterwards? I mean, what do they hope to do by sending Rudi Völler out there against France in what is another relevant game other than just, you know, biding time?
I think playing the game in Wolfsburg as they did on Saturday against Japan, where they were struggling to sell tickets for the game as well, and the fact that the fans there, even during the build-up play, were whistling the team, and those whistles got louder at both half-time and at full-time. So imagine that then on a bigger scale in Dortmund against France. That would have been even worse for them. And the fact is, during the summer, they drew with Ukraine, they lost to Poland, they lost to Colombia, they lost to Belgium back in March when they were fortunate that it was only 3-2, given the amount of chances, again, that Belgium had during that game. The trend, as they say in Germany, was not Hansi Flick's friend. They have been on this route for a while, and I think it's an understandable decision because of also, of course, he had the success in the Champions League with Bayern. The thing is, I don't think Hansi Flick has changed. He's always retained this gung-ho mentality, and the difference is that at Bayern, one of the things he had was this one-man sweeping machine called the Roadrunner in Alfonso Davies. And with Germany, you can't afford to be that high risk because the defensive talent that they have isn't good enough. And I think that he built it too much around his ideas of what he had at Bayern, rather than playing to, okay, well, what are the weaknesses of my team and how can I protect those?
I can't fathom what a study in contrast this was, because Sunday afternoon, Germany, who, for those who don't follow basketball, were kind of a gigantic Teutonic basketball joke for many years in Europe. They go and they win. They become world champions in basketball in the Men's World Cup. They beat the U.S. along the way, among other people. And yes, the U.S. didn't have possibly their strongest team, but it's still the freaking U.S. and the NBA, and the country's four times as big as Germany. So it's an incredible achievement. And I can't help but wonder whether, like, are we seeing, like, the rise of German basketball to the decline of German football? Are they going to be better in basketball than they are in football at some point? They probably won't. But still, it's something fun to think about, at least for me. Because obviously, when it comes to football, Germany's a team I always root against, even when they're playing
England.
You
hate them, Gav, didn't you?
I don't hate them. No, but you root against them because they're really freaking good and they're the gold standard. More than anybody in Europe.
Can't you just enjoy their success? And enjoy them being brilliant?
No, that would be
weird.
Why
do you want to knock them?
What?
Because they were good.
But when you had the whole David Goliath thing, like, you were supporting Goliath, right?
I never got all these these snooker haters on Steve Davis, or the dart haters on Eric Bristow when they were top. Enjoy them that they're top.
When you watch Rocky IV, you were all aboard with Ivan Drago, right?
No, I weren't.
Yes, you were.
No, I weren't.
Yeah, you were an Apollo fan, not a Rocky fan.
I'm all over Rocky.
Clearly. All right. We've added him. Don, you had a question for Archie.
Yeah, Archie, when I look at this group of players and I look at the management structure in Hansi Flick, is he really inept at getting a spark out of the players? Because this is a really, really good crop of players to work with.
Is it?
Well, I think so, isn't it?
Let's let Archie answer.
It doesn't compare to the previous crop. There are people who are not on the same level as your Philipp Lahms, your Bastian Schweinsteigers, your magic that Mesut Özil could conjure and did conjure in a Germany shirt. And I think there has been a drop-off from that. But at the same time, is there enough to form a cohesive unit? Absolutely. Watching the All or Nothing documentary that was released this weekend to coincide with this international break, you can't doubt that the level of analysis is there. The amount of detail that they go into, but it's, I think, the bigger picture decisions that are being taken that were the problem here. And was somebody like Joshua Kimmich, was he prepared to go and play right back and play it in a way that is defensively responsible, shall we say? I think that that's one of the things that this team needed. I think of the Germany team winning in 2014, the World Cup, and I look at what somebody like Benedikt Höwedes did, somebody who doesn't have anywhere near the same technical quality as a Joshua Kimmich, but he played every single minute of that campaign at left back. And I think that what you see at international level, and what also makes the best clubs tick, is that people come in and do jobs for you when it is needed, and I think that there was not enough sacrifice made in that sense.
Okay, on this specific point, I'm sorry. I am Team Kimmich all the way. I appreciate what Benedikt Höwedes did. You know, you're a defensive midfielder, you're a center back, and you go, you play left back out of need. We've seen it happen during tournaments. We're not in a tournament. We're in a friendly. Mm-hmm. And you're building towards something. And for me, Joshua Kimmich, we can have a debate, Wirtz maybe one day. But right now, Joshua Kimmich, if he's not Germany's best player, he's the second or third best. He's definitely in the top three.
I just think the spark's gone.
You can talk about spark. I'm going to talk about positions, right? Positions
are irrelevant if you haven't got it in you to produce.
Okay, Joshua Kimmich has it in him to produce.
We know this.
He's a central midfielder. He plays central. I'm not into labels, right? If the tournament comes around and somebody gets injured and the guy's got to play it right back, then he'll play right back. But yeah, he is your best player. Normal people go and they put their best players into the positions where they can do the most damage, right? And to the opposition. And that's Joshua Kimmich's position in midfield. Also, because guess what? Ilkay Gundogan's not getting any younger, is he? Right?
My question is, why is this Germany team getting rolled over so easy?
Let's let Archie answer here on this point.
He didn't. Look, Kimmich played in central midfield during the World Cup. That's the point there. And he's also not in form. And he's not been for a while. And Kimmich even prophesied his own downfall after the World Cup, saying, I'm afraid of falling into a hole. And I've been at Bayern a lot of times since the World Cup. People groan when he's going to take a corner. Like, there is not a good mood around him, and he's struggling. And I don't think that Kimmich and Gundogan as a double pivot works.
So the way to revitalize him is to play him in a different position at right back that he hasn't played regularly in years. This is the other thing.
I think that he can play right back better than any current option that Germany have. Like, that's the fact of it. And he's like, he needs to have somebody who sits behind him. That's been the conclusion of Thomas Tuchel. That's why Bayern tried to get in João Palhinha at the end of the window. I think that Gundogan is in better form than him and deserves his place in the side ahead of him.
That is a double pivot, though. That looks slow to me in Kimmich and Gundogan. That looks a slow double pivot.
I wouldn't play them together.
Pardon?
I wouldn't play Kimmich and Gundogan together.
No, me neither. It's too slow. You could run off the back of them two very easily. Unbelievably good players. But we've seen now, possession is not king anymore.
I want to talk about other issues that they have further up the pitch. And we touched upon this off air, and regular readers will know that all this stuff about creating players' pathways and people taking, and we always see this all the time. National team does well, and there's always like the youth team guys who come out of the woodwork and take credit for it. Like we saw with Belgium's golden generation, we saw with Iceland even. Like, oh look, they invested in this. Yeah, obviously you need to have infrastructure and so on. But if you're talking about the highest level, and Germany is or should be at the highest level, there's an element of randomness. It's nature, not nurture, I think, that creates great players. Because if it were, post the reboot and everything, when we're all praising Germany for producing a ton of great players and they're doing so well, gee, did it not occur to somebody? They might have produced at least one striker, the best reboot post-reboot strikers that they produced, correct me if I'm wrong here, Archie, are what? Kevin Folland and Nicholas Füllkrug, right? This is the gold...
Kevin Behrens right now.
Yeah, I mean, all right, exactly, right?
But right.
So you can do everything right, and Germany produced a ton of super talented wingers and attacking midfielders, and people could play with the ball, but they couldn't do that. And they have an issue there, and they obviously still have a big issue at fullback as well. So his solution in this game was to play, was just to move Kimmich from midfield and move Schlotterbeck, who, by the way, hasn't had a great start to the season at Borussia Dortmund, to left back. Archie, am I wrong here? Do people not understand this randomness of superstardom?
What do you mean by the randomness of the superstardom? The fact that over time, there's just going to be times when you have generations that come through that aren't,
or just individuals. They've been looking for a striker for what, 10 years, right? Miro Klose kept playing until he was 53 years old, I believe, right?
Right.
They got Lukas Podolski, who was...
Do you mean like randomness, as in like one day they'll produce six number nines, at the minute they've got none? Do you mean that's how random it is?
Yes, you can't plan on it. You can't say somebody's youth development is rubbish because they don't produce at that highest level. You can produce a large volume of serviceable players, which I think Germany's done largely, but you can't do that.
So to that point, I think that particularly living in Germany and seeing how people talk about things, I think that one thing they maybe suffer from is the wealth of intelligence that they have. And they sometimes overthink everything to think that there is an answer and a solution to everything. And particularly when it comes to trying to find this next number nine, I think that they were probably congratulating themselves a little bit too much after what happened in 2010, 2014, and thought that this was all a result of everything they were doing, as opposed to thinking about it, as you're saying, in the randomness context of it, which, if you look through generations, is also part of it. Naturally, they were doing things that helped it, but there are certain things in life that you just can't predict. There's certain events that have effects on human beings where, like, it produces a reaction. The fact that, could it have been predicted that Bayern would suffer in the way they did in 2012, that pain and the drive that I think also helped give Germany that motivation and incredible belief and drive that they had, both with the Bayern sector of players in 2013, but then in 2014, that played a huge impact. So there's so many different factors that I'm with you, I would say, about thinking about it as well. Everything can't be planned for here.
No, and that's why I don't have a problem with him, for example, playing Kai Havertz up front. There's no...
No, sometimes it's necessity, isn't
it? Yeah, we could debate whether he's a genuine center forward. Maybe he hasn't found his position yet. Yeah. But the guy's tall, he's strong, he works hard. You know, wasn't great against Japan, I thought, at all, but then he wasn't the only one. On to this. You've taken issue with how chaotic... Again, we think about Germany, we think about these stupid stereotypes of order and so on. In reality, and it's funny because we often have Jan on talking about, like, and he talks about how Bayern is constantly a zoo, especially in recent years with, you know, people plotting against each other. It's like some Machiavellian thing. But because for many of us in the West, we have this image of Germans as ordered and rational all the time, we can't understand how freaking irrational Bayern have been over the last couple of years, although my friend Ralf Honigstein likes to say it's because of the northernmost Italian city, Munich is. But anyway, on this point, can you just describe a little bit? Because they made the announcement while everybody was celebrating Germany becoming world champions in basketball. And there's a bunch of other things. Can you just run us through those?
Mate, anyone who has taken a train regularly in Germany will particularly bat back at you about things being organized here, let alone punctual. It's been chaotic, to say the least. You look at the fact that Aki Watzke, the CEO of Borussia Dortmund, but also the vice president of the DFB, was mocking the new reforms that Hannes Wolf, who was recently appointed as the director for youth football training and development, had come forward with to try and change and help the way that youth football is run, and saying that, well, what's next? Are they going to suggest that we play with a square ball? That didn't look good. You have Kai Havertz moaning about the fact that, oh, well, nobody really supported us back home, and all the other countries had their fans going for them. And it's like, Kai, you're not reading the room here, nor are you listening to what anyone is saying back home. You have that announcement, as you mentioned, with the basketball. You have the team and their preparations after a behind-closed-door game being leaked to a national newspaper here, probably with the thinking maybe that, oh, well, if people see that we are trying to do stuff differently, they'll soften their stance. And it's like, well, you've basically just given Japan your game plan once again. And, yeah, I could go on. This is all just within the last week. And the DFB is just a continual clown car when it comes to its public relations and the way it is viewed and seen as being so out of touch with the fans, even letting Hansi Flick take that training session on Sunday morning. Put him out of his misery instead of just having him mournfully stand about in front of a couple of thousand of fans as well. Like, God, how he must have felt.
Don, that's pretty crappy. You've decided to sack the guy.
Yeah.
And you make him go and take the...
No idea what the thinking is there. I've got no idea. You can't even say we're in a conversation with someone else. Can you take a training session? As Archie said, you would just have the conversation in the morning. You would just do the right thing, do the honourable thing. You wouldn't let him stand there and take a training session in front of thousands, as Archie said there, knowing that you've been sacked or getting the sack.
I feel like last time they scapegoated Oliver Bierhoff. Now there's no Bierhoff to sack because obviously you can't sack Rudi Völler for this, right? Because he's only just got there. So, I find this really remarkable. I'm almost wondering whether maybe we should reevaluate Bierhoff a little bit in light of what we know now about how these people operate. You're making a face. No, you disagree?
Yeah.
Du bist kein Bierhoffista?
Not especially.
All right.
I think that too much was probably read into the success of 2014. Like in Germany, there's always been this big thing about how smart it was for Germany to go and base themselves away from everybody else in Campo Bahia, it was called in Brazil, and how amazing their training center was there. And I just think that one of Bierhoff's key jobs in that position, you have to protect the team and make sure that they are not, you're basically, I'd say like a boxing promoter, you're trying to manage the situation as best as possible. I think that's one of, in terms of rhetoric. And the fact that the players were still having to think about what gesture they were going to do the night before the tournament began with this whole One Love armband thing, which like the players say was super annoying, and I think that that's something that, that's why your officials and your higher-ups are there, to do just that.
But wasn't the decision for the One Love, wasn't that, I mean, mm-hmm. I would assume how to handle that, that was taken above Biroff's head, right? I'm assuming that was the FA.
It was, but the fact that the players felt under pressure that, well, we need to still send some sort of statement out here. When the fact is, we know how World Cups work. After the first game is played, everyone's talking about the football. And they still had that playing on their mind. So I think that Bierhoff's management of that wasn't good. The fact that they went and trained somewhere which was out in the middle of nowhere, away from anyone in Qatar, particularly because of the dynamic when it came to the whole press conference situation and how Germany ended up looking aloof because they wouldn't send a player with Hansi Flick to the second game. And you're the only country that does that? Why? Well, just be closer then to everything else. So I don't think that these decisions went down well. And the way that Oliver Bierhoff is viewed by many Germans is just being this PR guy. And that is a massive problem for the German team right now, is connecting back to the fans, because they had a huge connection with them when you think back to 2006, even 2010. I'll give you an example. A friend of mine who does not like football at all, to the point that she went to Wembley Stadium over the summer and didn't realize it was a football stadium, okay? But she loved this national team. Like, when she sees Bastian Schweinsteiger, she's like, oh, Schweini, yeah, oh, Podolski, fantastic. But I asked her, okay, but can you name any of the current team? She was like, no, I've just lost interest in it. And that's the thing. Germany needs to get those people back on side in time for next summer, because a home Euros is huge. But there is just this, I think, complete gap when it comes to authenticity and identification.
Okay, can you just make it clear for the record, Oliver Bierhoff, not just a PR guy. He is tall, he is handsome, he is wealthy. He scored a winning goal in the Euros, okay? Which is more than any of the three of us have done. Sure. Although, Don, you probably came closest.
Not really.
Don.
Well, Archie, I want to ask, and this is probably the impossible question, but so where did Germany go from here? Not in terms of the runners and riders for the national job, but who's this now on to produce young players? Because as you said, the Euros are going to come around pretty quick. So where are Germany going to be potentially in 12 months' time if they're not bringing bright young players through to make the national side better?
I think there has been a reduction in terms of the amount of young players who are German and playing in the Bundesliga. I think that that's a result of the Premier League squeeze, I would say, and the need to keep themselves financially profitable and what it is to, you know, I think, get the money in if you're a club like Mainz or Stuttgart from various clubs. So I think that that has an impact on it. But it's not something that's solvable over 12 months, to allude to what we were talking about earlier.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking whoever the new manager might be, if he's still got the crop of players to work with, the same crop of players, and I think from the outside, looking like the spark's gone, how did Germany get going again?
Well, I mean, that's where I want to transition to, because obviously there's long-term fixes. You don't have time for a long-term fix. You're going to have to bring a new manager. The name I've seen mentioned, I don't know if it's just us in the media saying, like, ooh, who's the highest profile German manager who's unemployed? Ah, Julian Nagelsmann. Let's link him to the job. Mm-hmm. I really like Julian Nagelsmann. I'm on the record for saying how horrendously and how stupid it was when Bayern sacked him, and the way they did and when they did and for the reasons that they gave.
That doesn't feel like a good fit to me.
He does not feel like a good fit to me, because I would imagine Nagelsmann's somebody who needs to kind of work daily with the players to really have that experience. You'd probably also, since he's still under contract with Bayern, you might need to chuck some money at them. This whole optics of Flick replacing Nagelsmann might be nice if they showed some kind of imagination and didn't just go with the same gang of people over again. And that includes Jurgen Klopp. I'm sure he'd be fantastic, but let's leave him where he is for now. Can you help me here? Can you come up? Has somebody mentioned somebody more realistic or better?
Oliver Glasner was another name.
Oh, great. Great football there. That's wonderful. Let's go in the opposite. Well, why don't they get that guy from Wolfsburg? What was his name? Hecking or whatever? Like, why don't they get him?
Dieter Hecking.
Yeah. Oh, that's progressive.
He's too busy at Nuremberg. No, that was a name which was mentioned at the end of the commentary of the Germany-Japan game, for example. But let's also not forget that I don't think Jürgen Klinsmann was an obvious choice when he came in to do the job for the 2006 World Cup, nor was Joachim Löw either. So I'm with you on the be imaginative, but I think it's harder to be imaginative when you're under such pressure and there's such desperation. And the dream person for it would be Jürgen Klopp. But is he going to come right now? Would he agree to do it just for the tournament? That would probably optically be the best thing that they could do to give him the job just for the tournament even. But it's difficult to come up with somebody who is, say, at a point in their career where they have enough of a reputation to warrant that job, but also be comfortable with working on not on a day-to-day basis and doing the things that being a national team coach demands. And as you say, Julian Nagelsmann doesn't really fit that mold, but would it appeal being the national team coach for a home Euros?
It feels 100%. Like an experience problem thing is, to me, Gab.
It's 10 million. It's 10 million for him to be out of his contract at Bayern. And something says to me that after the way that the DFB got Flick from Bayern, that Bayern would be like, oh, you'd like him. Okay, well, pay up then and we're all good.
Yeah, it feels like an experience thing to me. I feel as though if Nagelsmann went in for the World Cup, it could go disastrously wrong.
Euros.
It could go really wrong to an embarrassing stage. Not because he's a bad manager. It's because they're asking a young manager to deal with the mess that's going on over a long period of time and work with experienced players to try and deliver a home win, which is a lot of pressure. That could be a bit of a laughingstock for Germany. And I don't mean on the manager. I just mean the whole thing that's going on. It's not the right time for him. Experience is what I think they need.
You want experience? You want somebody who everybody thinks... Can I answer the question for you?
Well, yeah, but I think... Yeah.
Give you the experience? On. There is somebody out there who is experienced, who everybody in Germany, maybe even everybody in the world outside of Manchester United fans think is some kind of... And Cristiano Ronaldo thinks is some kind of genius. And he's old. And maybe you could bring him to manage something. Would that be... Ralf Rangnick's reputation outside of the sceptered aisle is still as somebody who knows what he's doing, right? And I know he's got another gig now, but, you know, it's certainly cheaper to get him out of it than it is to get Nagelsmann out. Would that be insane?
Would be.
Yeah.
It would be. I don't think he would at this stage with what's going on at Austria. And also because of the battles that he would have to fight at the DFB with people like Rudi Völler, with Hans-Joachim Watzke. They've said that they are looking for more of a long-term answer to the problem as well. Also, I think that element I mentioned about how it connects with people and getting people on side. Sure, look, the best way to get people on side is results. But also, since the rise of Jürgen Klopp, and I'd say in this era that we're in now, charisma and how you come across is important. Mm. And I think that is something that Ralf Rangnick, to a home audience, it's not something that he's massively seen as empathetic. It's partly because he wasn't recently at a very traditional club. The fact that he made the monster, as many fancy it here, that is RB Leipzig, I don't think that endears him to people very much either. So
get the Freiburg guy then. Right, all the German lefties love it. Right, Streich, right, run around, lots of energy. They can do that. Yeah. All right, Archie, we're gonna have to leave it there. Thank you so much,
Gab. Don, thank you. Pleasure.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab. Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Germany. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's do it.
England lose their perfect record as they're held to 1-1 draw in Ukraine. Don, I'm pretty sure there's nothing to worry about in terms of qualification to Euro 2024. But some felt they looked a bit labored. Are the standards for Gareth Southgate unrealistically high, or an away draw with Ukraine?
It's rubbish. It's not the end of the world, is it?
No.
I heard James Maddison talking about the state of the pitch and them playing a low block and it was difficult and they didn't play well, but it's not the end of the world. I mean, what I think is the end of the world, in my humble opinion, because I've been there as a player, is Southgate picking players who are not match fit and not match ready.
Ooh, like who?
Well, Harry Maguire. Calvin Phillips in the squad. I mean, what's James Ward-Prowse got to do? That guy's churned out about 400 games in the last three or four seasons.
Yeah, but Harry Maguire's England captain. If you drop him, you create a story.
So what? Gab, I had it when I'd done my ACL when I was at West Ham, and I was getting in the Scotland squads under Bertie Vokes, and I felt an imposter at times because I was in the squad rehabbing from an ACL, so I weren't even sort of like match fit.
But you were around for your leadership qualities and your sparkling personality.
Absolutely, of course. In the same group, Gab, Italy were held to North Macedonia. Good side, by the way. In Spalletti's first game in charge, not the best way to start.
No, really bad way to start, in fact. And yes, I can tell you, oh, it was a bad pitch. Yes, it was a rubbish pitch. But so what? It's freaking North Macedonia. Italy actually started well in the first half.
They
played with tempo. It was end to end, yeah. Had a couple chances. Tonali hit the post. Immobile then eventually scores. And then they do that awful thing, which they really shouldn't do. The tempo drops. They're like, yeah, let's control the game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Except you're not controlling anything because then it's a free kick. And Bardi goes and hits a free kick. And Donnarumma moves in slow motion. I don't know if he's unsighted. He's being slaughtered. They have to do better. They got to do better. And this game against Ukraine on Tuesday night feels like a must win. Brazil beat Bolivia 5-1 as Fernando Diniz makes his debut on the bench, Don. Neymar scored 2 goals and also missed a penalty. Might have had a hat-trick. But he's now Brazil's all-time leading goal scorer with 79 goals in 125 appearances, surpassing Pelé. He said afterwards that he's not as good as Pelé, and I imagine you agree, and so do most people, except maybe Neymar's sister. But can you put him in context for us?
What, in terms of him and Pelé?
No, just Neymar, like, because we have this tremendous sense of underachievement because of his transfer fee and whatever, and Brazil didn't win a World Cup. But he scored more goals than Pelé.
I've been pretty consistent, in my opinion, I think, in Neymar. And I think even, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, when Messi was at his greatest, like peak Messi, I think behind, or just behind Messi, in terms of natural talent, I thought Neymar was second best. You know, Ronaldo's Ronaldo, machine. Right. You know, I thought Neymar, in terms of natural talent, was only just behind Messi. I think that's how good he is. Now, whether he could have made better choices, I think the biggest mistake will always be leaving Barcelona to go to PSG to try and win the Ballon d'Or when he was so successful and looked so good and fit and sharp. I think that is, when he puts his head on the pillow, he'll have lots of regrets. But the talent, I still think he's in the conversation.
Yeah, I think it's that talent side. I think the reason so many people are down on him is, well, A, the injuries and the fact that we seem to get injured at the wrong time, and B, the fact that we all assumed he was on an arc where he was going to be the next player in the world. And then, but Messi and Cristiano stuck around so long, and he never quite ascended. It's almost as if, you know, we almost blame him for not doing enough with his ability, which might be a bit unfair.
Yeah. Speaking of Pelé's record, Gab, FIFA say Neymar has broken it. You say they've broken it, but Brazil's FA disagrees. They say Pelé actually got 95 goals. How come?
And this is one for football historians, but back in the day, Brazil used to go on tour, and a lot of times they would face club sides.
Right.
And so they're counting goals that he scored against club sides. But look, these are really good club sides. And it's funny, because if countries did this today, I mean, imagine England going on tour and playing against, I don't know, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich.
Right.
Yes, I know, Chloe. Yeah, well, who would Bellingham and Kane play for? Whatever, right? You can do it in FIFA mode. But you're actually facing a higher standard of opposition. So
should they count?
Well, the Brazilian FA count them. I mean, no, you should be consistent in FIFA. count them, because otherwise, you know, I'll go play Kidderminster Harriers or something and score 20 goals. But, you know, that's the reason. A Bruno Fernandes goal gives Portugal a 1-0 win over Slovakia, Don. Roberto Martinez makes it 5 wins from 5, but there's a growing group of people acting why he continues to start Cristiano.
Why not? Why wouldn't you start him? It's just going to be around forever, isn't it? It's like he's going to have that problem all of the time, isn't he, Roberto Martinez?
Well, that Gonzalo Ramos guy, maybe?
Yeah. You know? Well, hang on. 1 5 out of 5, you said.
Yeah.
Right. So what's the deal? What's the problem?
Because he's in a group with like Muppets and like.
But you've just won 5 out of 5. Enjoy it, man. Why has everyone got to be on a downer? And he's in decent form. He's fit. Spain beat up Georgia away, winning 7-1. Morata bags a hat trick. What'd you learn?
Well, I learned that Lamine Yamal made his debut in an official game, which is huge because this means he's locked in. Yeah, 16 years old. And now he's locked in for Spain, won't be joining Morocco or I think it's Morocco that he's from. But I think they can move the ball if you score early against an opposition like Georgia, Kvaratskhelia, quiet, then you can go and score a lot of goals. Mm. You know, do this in a different standard at a different level. And I think the same applies to Alvaro Morata. Although, weirdly, he's Spain's 4th all-time leading goal
scorer. Almost scored again as well, didn't he? He's on fire.
Danny Olmo, yes, whacked it. Wout Weghorst comes off the bench to score for Holland as they come from behind to win 2-1 away to the Republic of Ireland. This was a big win, as it's a tight race for second place behind France.
I nearly went there, you know. I got unwell last week. I was about to go. I was going to go to the game with Jason McAteer, who was there.
Supporting Ireland, I would
say. Yeah. They started well. I just think they ran out of steam. For Republic of Ireland-wise, the second half was a non-event when you expect them to try and kick on. They just didn't have the skill. They didn't have the willpower. But for Holland, it's a great win for them.
Wout Weghorst, he's got stuff in there.
Exactly.
He can help.
He's still got a little bit in the locker. Two more women have come forward accusing Antony of assault. He denies all the charges, Gab. Brazil dropped him from the national side. And now Man United have given him a leave of absence. What's the right thing to do here?
So I think it's 100% correct that Manchester United gave him a leave of absence. Some people will say, why did they do this sooner? I think you want to stand by your player who protests his innocence, but now that you've got, you know, you've got three women now coming out, right? Who are all making these very serious accusations. You can read more about them. There's a police investigation in the UK as well as in Brazil. You don't know. You can't know if you're Manchester United. Yeah, I mean, they're trying to find out to get a sense. Mm. And yes, he has a right to be presumed innocent until he's proven guilty. But equally, you have a right to protect your brand. And if you stand by him, even just in light of what's already out there, unless it all turns out to be false.
Sensitive, you know, though, isn't it?
It's very, very sensitive. I think United made the right choice here. But Dom, purely on the sporting side, if you were Erik ten Hag, how do you deal with Antony's absence on the pitch?
Well, it's not just him now, isn't it? It's Jadon Sancho that he's got to deal with. But in terms of on the pitch, Garnacho.
Well, you can try to rehabilitate Sancho.
Well, you can.
But if not?
No. Garnacho, I think, is the obvious candidate on that side. I think he can play there.
More than Pelistri?
I think so, from what I've seen. I think Garnacho looks as though he's got something about him in terms of it looks like he could handle if Erik ten Hag said, right, you've got a dozen games, or whatever the number might be. There's 10 games, go and play. I think looks like to me he's got character, he's got personality to wear that shirt and pull it off. But to be fair, Antony's not been in good form. You know,
but he always plays anyway.
Yeah, well, that's a problem for the manager, surely.
I'd love to see Amad Diallo, but he's injured. And
well, the funny thing about that, Gab, is I watched Diallo
Sunderland.
When I commentated on the Fulham game, I believe, in the FA Cup, and he played up against Kozawa and he ripped him to shreds, like unbelievably good. And I wondered why, and I checked that he was obviously still a Man United player when I'd done this sort of little bit of work on his background. He obviously went to Rangers, went to Sunderland, done really well. And then I wondered if this kid's that good, which I thought he was amazing, like literally Kozawa couldn't get near him. And I wondered why they'd done 90 million on Sancho, 85 million on Antony. When you got this kid coming through, surely they would have been better off investing more time into Amad, no?
Well, he's injured now.
This was last year. But you've still spent close to £170 million on two wingers.
And they spent a ton of money on Diallo as well, incidentally.
I've seen more in him than I did in Jadon Sancho and Antony, for sure. Another sensitive one, Gab. Luis Rubiales has finally stepped down as president of the Spanish FA. Gab, was this inevitable? And were you surprised he chose Piers Morgan's show to do it?
I think it is realistically inevitable now that he's got actually facing criminal charges as well, from a reasonable perspective. But then from a reasonable perspective, you wouldn't just keep doubling down the way he has, right? Yeah. So he's come out and he said he's going to do it so he can keep defending himself. I am surprised that he chose Piers Morgan's show to do it. And it slightly depresses me, like nothing against Piers for getting these big thing, these big interviews on. But what you can't just release a statement on Twitter or call a press conference and explain it or do it with Spanish
media. Do you think in hindsight he must really regret not just coming out the day after and go, do you know what, I got that horribly wrong?
Well, 1,000%.
That's what I'm saying. The way he kept digging and doubling down, he just kept making it worse and worse and worse.
The easiest way would have been what they talked about, him apologizing, saying like, this was wrong, self-suspension, quietly, which the offer was on the table from other members of the Spanish FA, and said he comes out and says like, I'm not resigning. And then, you know, I think he was done at that point. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launcher online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. A Lionel Messi free kick gives Argentina 1-0 win over Ecuador. Don, some people figured he might retire after World Cup, but frankly, you feel like Argentina still need him.
I think so, Gab. I was guilty of watching the World Cup and judging the first couple of Argentina games like he was Messi of 5-10 years ago. And I thought there was a couple of games where he was really strong. I think it was the Mexico game, I think, comes to mind, where he scored and everything changed. And then I watched him and I made a point of watching Messi on just being a footballer, not watching him being Messi the genius. And he was still one of the best players at the World Cup just by being a footballer. So I would say while you've got him, do not let him retire, because he can be that good. He might not be the Messi of 10 years ago, but still on a football terms, he is still brilliant. Gab, that goal from Messi means now he has 103 international goals. He's 6 behind Ali Day and 20 behind Ronaldo's 1-2-3. On the one hand, it's a big lead and Cristiano is still playing. On the other hand, Messi is a couple of years younger. Will he retire as the all-time leading goal scorer?
I find this fascinating because there's so many elements to it. It's not just about whether you can catch Cristiano. The question is, how much more is Cristiano going to play? I think the fact that they both take penalties and free kicks probably means that if they really, really want to keep adding to their totals, they can do that.
Funny that, though, because I worked on a Saudi game, Al Nassr, and Ronaldo actually gave up a free kick, a penalty, for his teammate.
See,
so of, because it might not be that
against
obsessed.
A total of 123. My guess is no. My guess is Cristiano will retire, but anything's possible. Scotland win 3-0 away in Cyprus to make it 5 wins from 5.
We're there. We've qualified.
9 points clear of Spain with 2 games in hand. 11 clear qualified. Of Erling Haaland and third place Norway. How excited are you?
It's amazing, Gab. And I tell you what's amazing. The work that Steve Clarke's done to actually recognise how good Scott McTominay can be, and Erik ten Hag hasn't figured this out, because he started as a sort of number 10-ish when he was a kid, and then he got sort of put into a number 8, and then everyone thinks he's now a holding midfield player, so he can't get the Man United team because Erik ten Hag and others think he's a holding midfield player. When you let him go forward, and what Steve Clarke's done to him is incredible. I think he's the top scorer in qualification so far. He's absolutely on fire. Every time he plays, he looks like when he plays for Scotland, he's got a different lease of life. The same as John McGinn, who struggled This time last year when he was at Villa, couldn't get a game, got the captaincy taken off him. He's now playing well, got the captaincy back. But the job that he's done, Steve Clarke, I think, to this group of players is actually remarkable. It's been amazing, I think.
Are you saying McTominay's best position is
going forward? Yeah, I think so. Well, he's proved it for Scotland. Well, I think he scored 6 and 5, I think he's got.
United do have Bruno Fernandes and Mason Mount.
But my point is, when he was at club, as in Man United,
right, he was seen as purely
as a holder midfield player, yeah, which I think he's much better than that, and I think he's proven that under Steve Clarke. So, Gab, your net spend, Swiss Ramble has compiled a list of 20 biggest spending clubs this summer. What stands out for you?
So, look, it's not a real surprise because I've been paying attention to this all summer, but 4 of the top 10, including the number 1, Al Hilal, are Saudi. 12 of the top 20 are English, including Brentford, Burnley, and Nottingham Forest, which I found a little bit...
I did, yeah.
A little bit surprising.
Yeah.
And the European top 3 is Chelsea, Paris Saint-Germain, and Arsenal, perhaps less surprising. But... let me chuck it back to you. I mean, I think we've reached this point where, you know, historically smaller clubs like Brentford have always been run in a very, very prudent way. They do things differently, whatever. I mean, I think in their case, they made a lot of money in past years and they said, all right, let's double down this year and invest. Burnley and Forest, that's a lot of money to chuck around for clubs that have just come up, right, Don?
Well, the Forest one, it still baffles me on how Steve Cooper can try and have 25 to 30 players and you pick 11, you pick somewhere on the bench and half of them are in the stand moaning because I know what those footballers are like, that you can't get in the team or the squad. And it baffles me. The Vincent Kompany one, I think, and I heard him talk about it the other day, saying this team and this squad is going to be very, very good in a few years' time. It's the now that matters.
Yeah, he's got to make sure they're still in the Premier League a few years' time. And by the way, Paris Saint-Germain, they were number one until... they've sold Marco Verratti to Al Arabi.
Mm-hmm.
According to reports, Harvey Barnes was played for England in a friendly, but is still eligible to play for other countries, is considering switching his allegiance to Scotland, while Elliot Anderson is considering the opposite, switching from Scotland to England. Don, you're the perfect guy to ask because they both play for Newcastle. You're a Newcastle fan. Yeah. You're from that part of the world. You were eligible to represent both. Who better than you to talk about this?
This is weird to me. This surely comes down to how you feel. How you feel, and I always wanted to play for Scotland, you should never be allowed to switch, in my opinion. Even if you played a friendly, if you played 2 minutes, if you played an hour, what gives you the right as a player to say, right, I'm going to go and play for Scotland. Oh, by the way, in 2 weeks time I might change and go and play for England.
Well, okay, so being cynical here...
I don't understand it.
Okay, well, what if you're eligible to play for England and... Scotland,
right?
And
which I was.
For the last,
my mum was English, my dad was Scottish.
The last 20 years, I'd say England are a lot better
than
Scotland.
Nothing to do with it.
And you feel English, but you can't get into the England team because there's better teams. And then,
nothing to do with it.
No, that's not why Harvey Barnes might be.
I don't know what these two boys are thinking, but I know when
I don't know about the other guy switching back from Scotland to England.
I don't know.
He likes a challenge, yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it because I had the choice to play for England or Scotland, and it was never, oh, who's doing better? I want to play for them. I felt Scottish. My dad was Scottish. I wore Scotland kits when I was a youngster. All my pictures when I'm a kid, I've got Scotland tops on. So I wanted to play for Scotland.
Your mum not a big football
fan?
No,
she wasn't a massive footy fan, but there's no way I would have played 1 minute for Scotland and then went, oh, Kevin Keegan's on the phone. I want to go and play for England.
Okay.
No chance. It's how you feel. In my opinion. You might disagree.
Well, because you had a dad who obviously was Scottish and felt Scottish and dressed you up in his Scotland kit.
Yeah, but then I felt it and I did and I wanted to. So that was my life ambition. I can't abandon that life ambition because Kevin Keegan rings and goes, I want you to play for England.
Okay. What if the Scotland managers, Bertie Vokes, Craig Brown, they don't like you? They're like, oh, Don Smells or whatever.
So I've already played.
Right?
Yeah.
And you've played in a friendly against the Faroes.
Yeah.
Scotland lost, as they sometimes do against the Faroes. And then you get a call from Kevin Keegan.
No.
And says, like, Don.
No. Don what?
No, it wouldn't convince you.
It wouldn't.
Okay, what if you had dead granddad who you never met, who was Scottish,
right?
And you grow up on Tyneside, and all your friends are England fans.
What am I though?
What?
What am I now? Am I Scottish?
You're eligible to play for Scotland and England.
Yeah, Scotland. Me?
You still
Scotland.
All right.
I don't understand how you're Harvey Barnes and you want to switch, and if you're Elliot Anderson, you want to switch. It was like the Jack Grealish, Declan Rice thing with Ireland. It was like you chose Ireland. You shouldn't be allowed to switch. You chose them. You wanted to go and play for them.
I think Declan Rice chose Ireland, and I think Grealish too. I think both those cases, because England didn't take much of an interest in them. Right?
But then that would be even more incentive, in my opinion, to go, I'm definitely playing for Ireland.
And watch a bunch of World Cups on television, potentially.
Whatever.
Right? No. And
whatever.
Make less money.
Whatever. Ryan Giggs didn't switch.
This is true.
Man United's total debt gap has now reportedly passed the £1 billion mark. Is this a big deal?
It's a big deal because it's a big number, and when you've got a lot of debt, you need to service that debt. And in United's case, they're servicing the debt because by which they wouldn't necessarily need to if they had made certain choices beforehand. It's no different from what we saw before about the way this club has been run over the years, and United fans know why. What I struggle with, again, though, is when there are people who organize protests and so on. We saw one recently. But I don't understand why they don't get bigger numbers. I mean, when this is, it's one of those mysteries.
Bigger numbers?
Okay, so Valencia, right, have a similar situation with an owner that they don't like, and Peter Lim, right?
Yeah.
What do? There's a game at the Mestalla. They tell everybody, okay.
Oh, in terms of the fan protest.
Yeah, we're not going to go in until the 20th minute, right? And so there's an empty stadium. There's 50,000 angry Valencia fans outside the stadium, right? Yeah. That has an impact.
Yeah.
At Old Trafford, these poor guys from whatever, I forget the name, but it's a date, right? They say, okay, everybody, we're not going to do anything during the game. We want to support the team. Everybody, after the final whistle, let's all go down, gather near the corner flag, and it's one stand, and let's sing, you know, we want Glazers out, right? Mm-hmm. Great, right? 70,000 people at Old Trafford. I think, from reports, I mean, I wasn't there, they got between 5,000 and 10,000, right? So if I look at that, if I'm a Glazer, I'm like, all right, well, you don't even have the support of the majority of match-going fans, right? This is the part I really don't understand. And
But fans' loyalty is a hard one.
It feels
one.
Like there's a real hardcore that are really committed to this, and a bunch of people who's like, I don't like the Glazers, yeah, but then the Qataris could be worse.
If fans' loyalty is always to their football club because they love them, and I speak from experience probably about 4 or 5 years ago when Newcastle fans were thinking about protesting to Mike Ashley, and they semi sort of had this conversation up on Tyneside where they were going to abandon a Premier League game. And they said, no one go to this Premier League game, which would have been some statement at home, St. James's Park. They couldn't do it. They literally said...
Why? Because people don't care enough.
No, they care too much. So the Newcastle fans couldn't bring themselves not to go to the Newcastle game. Yeah. They couldn't do it because they love the football club so much. They ended up going. So a fan's loyalty...
But this is what I really struggle... No, and you had the same thing years before with when Freddie Shepherd was going and actually dissing the actual fans. You remember that, right? And nothing happens, right?
No.
I just think it's extremely odd. I just view the person who owns a football club, he doesn't actually own it. As I like to mention, I think it was Patek Philippe.
So how do they get out of this billion then?
No, the person who owns a football club doesn't actually own it. They simply look after it for another generation.
Custodians.
Right? They're custodians. That's all they are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're actually, I don't know.
But how much can they afford, not afford in terms of money, to keep running a £1 billion mark, £2 billion mark, £3 billion? It's ludicrous, no?
I think there's different elements to it, right? Some of it is still left over, I believe, from when the Glazers bought the club, where, you know, obviously they borrowed money and then put the debt onto United. Some of it is transfer payments, which are paying in installments over time. I think they have a lot of latitude. I think they'd have no trouble borrowing more money if they need to, because United's such a strong brand. And that's the reality situation they're in. Gianni Carrasco scores the only goal as Belgium win away in Azerbaijan to stay top of their qualifying group. Don, with De Bruyne and Courtois injured, I think we can start talking about the golden generation now. But let me ask you about Eden Hazard. He's 32. He's not yet decided if he wants to retire. He's a free agent. He can sign with anyone anytime. He's had injuries, but can you talk about the mindset when a player decides to hang up his boots for the last time?
Not easy. And it depends where you're coming from as a player. I retired because I was 37 and I had just ridiculous amounts of injuries that I couldn't cope and I couldn't go on anymore, which was hard. But I think if you're 32 and I think if you're Eden Hazard, I think there's a lot in the back of your mind where you're thinking, I've not even played for 3 or 4 years at Real Madrid. But is my body starting to let me down? So only he knows the answer to that. Can he go on the pitch and give it 100%? Even Hazard's 90%, like I was talking about Messi before, is still good enough. But is his body capable of doing it? Well, that's the hard thing.
So, Bob, when you retired, you said you mentioned the injuries.
Yeah.
Was it just that you kept getting injured and it took too long to recover? Or do you feel that your skills had actually declined?
Well, your skills do decline the older you get, because you get to a certain point where you can't get around the pitch anymore. Right. Mine was more so of having no lateral cartilage after ACL operations and taking lots of painkillers every single day just to get by. So I'd be whacking in Voltrol tablets, painkillers, just to get by a training session. Then afterwards, do all the rehab, the ice and all the rehab to be fit just for tomorrow. And then tomorrow...
Just so you could train the next day.
Exactly. And then whack in the painkillers. And all of a sudden, your liver's all over the place. And you can't... You know, you're trying to struggle from a Monday. And I was lucky I had some good managers that allowed me a couple of days off, i.e. sort of Wednesday, Thursday, to try and let everything calm down. To train on a Friday, painkillers. Game Saturday, painkillers, but then injections to take all the fluid off. And you do that 1 week and you can get by. You try and do that over a month and 6 months to a year, and your body's just going, I can't
and it can have anymore. A lasting effect as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Major shock, Gab, in the Women's Champions League. Arsenal got knocked out.
Yeah, they knocked out by who? Read the question.
Well, I was just shortening it. Paris FC.
Not Paris Saint-Germain.
No.
Paris FC.
Yeah.
Which are a much smaller team, obviously, than Paris Saint-Germain.
Yes.
Don't have the big budget. It is a huge shock because, I mean, are they minnows? Paris is still a top-flight fight. It did well last year. But budget-wise, between them and Arsenal, there's no comparison whatsoever. It finished 3-3. Alessio Russo was among those. Arsenal's big signing, of course, last year, was among those missing a penalty. This is a major failure. It's a major flop. I think it's going to hurt too, because, you know, that forward momentum for the Women's Champions League, you need the big clubs, those players that we just saw on television at the Women's World Cup. Now a whole bunch of them who play for Arsenal aren't going to be there. It's a pretty bad situation. Paul Pogba revealed he considered retiring after being the subject of a criminal blackmail plot involving one of his brothers and some other friends of his he knew from growing up. Well, friends, maybe former friends. He's still going, albeit injured. Juve were hoping he could contribute something this season, but now it's far from certain, Don.
Yeah. This is another guy that I worry about in terms of injuries, and is his body starting to let him down? Poor Pogba. I commentated on a game a couple of weeks ago. They started well against Udinese, and he played a few minutes, I think, against Bologna and the game after. And I was listening to, and I was reading up on what Max Allegri was saying about him. And he was saying that 90% Paul Pogba is still a game changer. He's still brilliant. You've got to start churning out the games. If you're Paul Pogba now, you've got to be looking at churning out probably 25 to 30 games to have an impact. Otherwise, your body's going to start let you down. You can't get the minutes on the pitch. You're on a massive contract as it is. I worry for him.
He came on and played, I think, the last half hour or so, but then he was injured again.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't come off, but when he was walking off the pitch...
Was it Empoli? Muscle. I think it was Empoli.
Was it Empoli or was it Bologna?
Bologna was the second game. Empoli, right. I think it was.
Yeah, I think, as I said, if you're Juve, you have to plan without Paul Pogba, yeah. And then anything he gives you is a bonus.
Yeah. The Daily Mail, Gab, are reporting that England's Lionesses are prepared to take strike if they don't reach a deal with the Football Association over a pay with the national side. What's the issue here then, Gab?
So as I understand it, look, they're still negotiating, but they're talking about strike about maybe not playing in their next game. And the issue, a lot of it has to do with endorsements and sort of commercial endorsements, commercial opportunities, because between the European success and between the World Cup, a lot of these women have become a lot more famous than they were before, a lot more mainstream, which then you start to attract mainstream brands. And one of the things, you might remember this from when you played for Scotland, where if your FA has a deal with one sponsor, like you have to, and you want to go and sign your own deal, then they have to kind of approve it to make sure there's no conflict.
Yeah.
Same thing would also happen at club level, right?
Yeah.
And I think the deal that they originally struck, you know, a lot of the power rested with the FA, because most of these women did not have their own deals or did not have that kind of earning potential.
Yeah.
Now they do. So I think it's something that you can sort out and reach some kind of understanding. Mm. I think from the FA's perspective, much rather these people would go and make their own money off of compensation rather than piggyback on the FA deals as well. And these women want to get paid, and certainly from a commercial perspective, they have every right to.
Mm.
Amara Diouf made his debut for Senegal in their 1-1 draw against Rwanda. Don, the reason we're talking about this gentleman, who I'm assuming you've never heard of,
because
I hadn't heard of him before the weekend, is that he's 15 years and 94 days old. He was 14 when they played the Champions League final. Too young?
Far too young. Far too young. I've played against guys, I reckon, when I was older that were maximum, I think, 17. Rooney came through when he was 16. I think Shearer came through when he was 17, but they were like man Charles in terms of their height. And their
this
strength.
Is international football,
I know,
too.
Like. I know. That age, 14, 15, 16, doesn't seem right to me. It seems far too dangerous. You know, you could come up against some serious pros coming off the back of their careers who have got a point to prove, who are not particularly fit. They might be slow in the tackle. They might be just too big and too strong. That doesn't feel good to me. Not for the long term of these kids, anyway.
Yeah, I think it's not just a physical thing. I think there's a whole mental maturity thing as well.
Yeah, not true. So Man U reportedly could not sell shirts belonging to new signing Rasmus Højlund for more than a month, Gab. Why not?
So apparently, after negotiating for him and whatever, then they sign him for a lot of money, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, wait a minute. He spells his last name with the Danish O that looks like it has like a line to it, right? We don't have that letter.
No way.
On hand.
I thought you were going to say image rights or something.
No.
Something as simple as that.
They had to go and they reportedly had to go and order it. I don't know where you order it from or why you couldn't just make it.
Don't you just make one?
Well, you put a little bar across.
Yeah, just get an I or a 1, cut it, and put it across the O.
I don't know if they lost money on it or whatever, but obviously it's a good metaphor of all the chaos that is surrounding the club right now.
Who's in that club shop?
Off the pitch. You seriously got to wonder about
sacked.
That. No, but it's funny because, you know, Richard Arnold used to be the commercial director. Yeah. Maybe now that he's in the big chair, like, you know, things have started to slide a little bit. You've got all this stuff to worry about.
Fix that in 2 seconds.
I know. Don, that brings us to an end. Thanks for stepping in and filling Jules' little tiny shoes, because he's got little tiny feet. We're going to be back on Thursday. So until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.